And we're live with our 324th episode of Absolute AppSec. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-host, Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hey, everyone. We're trying a different aspect ratio today on the video. I just pushed that in there for no other reason than I wanted to see what it looked like. So if we don't like it, we'll switch back. Welcome to another episode. Excited to be here. As always, a couple announcements before we dive into the articles in the news for this week. Training still available both for Black Hat and DEF CON. The Black Hat course is going to be more intense on the secure code review side and some of the agentic bits that are going into that. That's why it's the Black Hat edition. The DEF CON 1 will concentrate solely on harnessing LLMs and how to build a harness, how to build your own Crocs and Socks LLM, I guess, right? Rather than Mythos, whatever you want to call it, but basically something too dangerous for us to have in our own hands to actually do testing, because apparently I'm salty about the fact that I couldn't get Opus or Fable to do anything without it bitching at me. And that's how today's going to go. I feel like gloves are off. Anyway, so we have both of those opportunities. Check out training.absoluteappsec.com. We did get news that we will be training at Black Hat EU again this fall, or this winter, whatever you want to call it. That's the beginning of December. There's going to be some other opportunities that are popping up. We're thinking about online courses and other ways to teach people how to harness LLMs and how to utilize that for secure code review. And yeah, other than that, trying to think what other conferences I will be at. I'm full in, you know, at this point, prepping for DEF CON, prepping for that event, playing with Hacker Tracker, doing updates there as well. If anybody, you know, is interested, there's some new features that are coming out that I'm pretty excited about. I haven't even showed Ken any of this yet, but, you know, there's some good stuff that's happening on that front. And yeah, what other conferences? I mean, Ken, I know you're kind of heads down right now as well. What does your travel schedule look like?
I mean, I'm trying to do like a meetup in Maine, but that's just because, you know, I like meetups and yeah, not really much travel. I mean, I wouldn't want to mention, I guess, the events in Vegas. Like we will have a couple parties like usual. So we'll get those invites out once we've got. I just got my placeholders on my calendar this morning. So okay. So, well, I don't have anything other than that. So like, spoiler alert, Seth and I don't plan these things actually. So, I mean, not anymore. So, other people are going to give us that information. We'll relay it. Don't think there's anything else to, so you'd mentioned both Black Hat and DEF CON training in Vegas. Yeah, I don't know. Nothing else.
Yeah. I did see that you presented at OWASP Nova. What was it, this last week, right? How did that go? What was it that you were speaking on there?
That's a good question. What was I speaking on there? Yeah. that was a talk I gave about the end of human scale AppSec, which basically talks about a little bit of like the now, the future, like the 2 to 3 year future, and the like, let's get wild and predict things out. Actually, there's a blog post I'm working on out because of that talk about the reasons why Git protocol may not survive the future of development. So, you know, teasing that one out should be kind of fun. But yeah, in any case, that was kind of what it was like. What processes change? How do you change those things? I think that the real message I wanted people to take away, which is I'm sure we'll get to the blog post I'd written, which was basically about like, hey, educate yourself in these ways because it'll help you be informed in conversations and be able to push back on things that you know are wrong, but you can't maybe articulate why. So I had a good time. I hope I got good feedback from the audience. There was an interesting thing where this is not like technical at all. We were in this high rise and it if you've ever been to the College Board's building in Reston, Virginia, it's like glass, like floor to ceiling glass windows all around too. So it's like I said, high rise. So you're up real high and you're surrounded by glass. And in like the last 10 minutes of the talk, a raging out of nowhere storm hit. And I mean, like, it looked like, I mean, it was lightning, it was thunder, it was the clouds. Like, anyways, why is this funny? Because as I'm giving this last 10 minutes, there's like a somewhat of a balcony on the outside of the glass wall, windows, whatever. And there's chairs there. So I'm giving a talk and all of a sudden just chairs are getting flung against the side of the window. And like, it sounded like just, you know, just getting pelted by baseballs being thrown by like a professional pitcher is crazy. And then you look over and it's just like lightning and this cloud just about to hit. It was very dramatic, but it was, so like, yeah, I promised to show you got your show, but, no, it was fun. It was crazy. But yeah, good audience. Lots of questions.
Good.
And I appreciate them doing that.
I mean, that one's, you know, Nova's been going for a long time, right? Like, good group that's, you know, running that one, or at least it seems to have transitioned. You know, you've got some OWASP groups that'll like kind of die out as the leadership changes or whatever it is, but it's good to see those kind of bigger groups, you know, maintain.
Especially because there was a period of time for a few years where pretty much meetups were dead completely and a lot of meetups didn't even come back. So kudos to Ben Pick. Kudos to Ben Pig. Kudos to Mike McCabe. Kudos to Abdullah Munawar. Not sure if Sean Porras still
was involved. Yeah, he was at one point. I don't know how involved he is anymore there too. But yeah, kudos to that team.
Yeah, it was fun, man. It was a really good time. Sorry. Not to belabor that. Nope. It's good.
You're good. What article do you want to talk through today?
I don't know if we start with an article. We can, I think we kind of have to go into the Fable Mythos stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that complex really, you know, to untangle it, you know.
It's not, I'm just so tired we get to talk about Mythos, right? Yeah.
Okay. I get it. But before we do this, I want to make a caveat here because like I don't think either of us intentionally want to be insensitive people. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that because there are people that I'm sure are, I know of one, at least one, and maybe even more in my network that work at Anthropic. And I'd be very clear that like, I don't have any ill will towards those people. I'm not trying to bag on when I disparage things, and I'm talking about me, and I'm sure you feel the same way, Seth. When I disparage things, I'm not disparaging those people that are inside of like the workers of Anthropic. Okay. They're probably doing amazing work. And obviously it's obviously they are. It's showing through. So that's like my caveat to all of this. Understand that your business has been trying to ruin everyone else's business. Understand that you've taken billions off the stock market, and understand that your marketing has caused incredible problems for people who are just trying to show up and do their job every day to protect the organizations they work with. You have got to understand that while I and Seth are not coming at you personally, your company is representing its product in a way that is not truthful, that is not always accurate. In fact, they had to go back and say as much when the government sanctioned them, say, oh, actually, it's not as bad as we said. There are other models online that have the same capabilities, which I would argue are better. I would say OpenAI's 5.5 is better than theirs for at least the purposes I use it for. But understand that if you're going to go, you're going to go to the security community, and you're going to market in such a way where it basically feels like FUD, and you're going to disrupt the security community, you have to do that with tact, because what has happened to every vendor who's overhyped and overblown things and caused massive disruptions when it comes out that, no, there are other capabilities that are very similar. There's like quite a bit of, this is very clearly overblown. Well, what happens? It's never been good. And I've been saying that, and you've been saying that for months and months and months, saying, listen, this is going to bite you. This is going to hurt you. You should stop, slow down. do what OpenAI is. Like, they're taking a more measured, in my opinion anyways, I can't speak for Seth, approach. So that's my, I just want to get this out of the way, Seth, because I do feel like we're, you know, I don't want to hurt people's feelings, but I have to be honest about when I see a company doing something that's very, very negative for a community, to call it out. It just has to be called out, and reality has to be reintroduced. So that's my caveat. Okay. Off to you, Seth.
Yeah. Well, and to that point, right? Like, we've said this for a while, as we've been playing with LLMs, because I mean, at this point, like, we've been through on the security side, and you have building a product, but also like on the consulting side, we've been through using the LLMs from, man, they are basically crap, to, yes, they're incredibly useful, right? You and I were talking before the podcast that this is, you know, this is the way, right? Like, I, you know, there's a, I'm working on a blog post about how to utilize, you know, agentic AI during a pen test to make it actually like custom, and building custom harnesses, and how much power that gives to us. Now, that is not dependent on a specific LLM. So marketing coming in, and we said this for a while, marketing coming in from one of these big frontier models saying that they are the shit, right? Like, and they completely have taken over, and, you know, you no longer need an AppSec team, or you no longer need a security team because you have an LLM. That, of course, is going to rub us all the wrong way, because we're trying to utilize that. And we are, we are customers of these frontier models, and it feels pretty shitty to actually be fighting with a large organization that is actively trying to basically market away your business, right? Or compete with you when you don't have that, you know, that same level of resource, or they're being disingenuous on how they're representing themselves to the wider community. This is why I like sigh whenever people ask me about Mythos, right? Is I'm like, damn it, right? Like, I get it that you're getting just that marketing effort, right? And how much money is going into that. And I also, like, on the flip side, like, I put on my business hat and I understand, because they have taken billions and billions of dollars. They have investor pressure that they have to turn a specific profit within a specific time frame, or be able to IPO at a specific level. So they're looking at any avenue to make money, or to represent that they can make money in order to meet those targets. And so it's this weird, damn it, dichotomy. And apparently I'm just swearing today, Ken. I just, like, I that's, you know, swearing. The fable. Aww, the fable.
That's you swearing.
The fable is, like, the fable stuff just pushed me over the edge this last week. Because I, you know, I'm trying to interact like I would with Quen or GPT-5 or, you know, whatever else. And I'm like, hey, man, I'm just looking at this code base for specific vulnerabilities or whatever it is. And it starts giving me that stupid yellow thing over and over and over. And finally, I was like, bag it, I'm done, right? Like, I, you know, you are actively preventing me from using your product, and for no reason other than, man, we're dangerous, right? Like, No, you're not, right? Like, you're utilizing what I'm giving you to actually be dangerous, and where to go and where to actually guide. And I just was like, yeah, this is over the top, right? And I think that's the reaction that we're seeing from the majority of the security industry at this point, right? Like, everybody's like, yeah, we know, right? Like, you've been saying this for a while, and guess what? You got burned because of what's going on. And I did want to post, I know we didn't necessarily share this link, right? But I'm not sure if you saw the Visa vulnerability agentic harness that those guys built, that they open sourced.
Yeah, I'd seen it. It's somebody in one of our networks that might have even built it. But we should pause though, and probably give, because I don't know if we, I'm sure everybody listening has the news, but just to recap what happened at the end of last week, basically the US government came in and said, okay, you've been saying how dangerous this thing is. You've been spreading all this FUD. We believe you. Shut it down. Right. And it Anthropic's like, well, you know, see, there's no prevention against a universal jailbreak, and that seemed to be kind of the crux of the issue, is that, you know, it can be jailbroken or whatever, you know, and because of that, those magical powers that it has are like unlocked to security minded people or hackers or researchers or whatever, right? Like, just too scary. And that's that. And that's, let's just start there. That's the problem. You press too hard on something that is basically not real, then, you know, you're going to get called out, right?
Yeah.
In this case, it was them calling themselves out in response to being sanctioned. So why I'm saying that is that, you know, they said, oh, hey, oh yeah, we believe you now. We believe you. You've said it. You've screamed from the mountaintop. Yes, it's scary. You're shut down. And their response was, okay, well, actually, that's a little harsh. You know, it's, you can't prevent universal jailbreaks, blah, blah, blah. This is kind of like the first initial response, or like they got it to basically find vulnerabilities in an application and try to patch them or something. That's essentially what it equated to. No biggie, right? Government's like, no. You said. And then they're like, okay, hold on. Let's put out some data and show how like other models are actually pretty much this capable in the same way, and like had to really backpedal. And it's like, that's the rub, man. You press too hard, you push too hard, you like put out too much, and it's gonna hit you, and it's gonna hit you hard. And that, so anyway, so they got shut down. They had to take Fable offline. They had to take Mythos offline. There's a lot of back and forth, you know, about it. And obviously we're adding to that, but I think,
yeah,
you know, hey, that's what you wanted, right? You wanted us to be afraid. You got what you wanted.
And that being said, we're talking about it, right? So like, we are definitely like kind of feeding in to that.
Sure.
Yeah, to that hype for sure. And we know about it. We're utilizing it. So, I mean, it worked, right? It worked. They'll maintain their market share or whatever. And, you know, I mean, honestly, like I'll be frank, right? Like, we use Claude Code. We use Claude, you know, on a daily basis now, you know, now for multiple reasons, whether that's development, whether that's helping parse code bases, whatever else it is. It, you know, it's part of our workflow. It's a tool that we use like anything else because it helps us do our job.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, there are, it's funny because it, you know, like everyone's like, ah, Mythos. Like I don't care about it. I actually read from, I don't know a whole lot about this company. It's called Black Kite, but I read this article, I think this morning actually, and they said something about like having a response for your Mythos, for like your C-suite Mythos questions or something along those lines. And one thing they said was like, you need to make sure your vendors are like using Mythos, because like, and I'm like, no, you fucking don't. I do this professionally, and I'm telling you, no, you don't. All day long, every day, I tell you what, you shouldn't use it. The cost would be insane. Like, nobody crazy, thinks about that. And actually, pull up. I don't ever really tout on this podcast my own blog post, but I am going to tout my own blog post because I wrote this specifically around this. It's been bothering me.
Yeah.
I'm seeing like the C-suite basically make these decisions where they'll vibe code up some app over a weekend or over a few weeks, right? Like, you know, this is the one thing with AI that is a little frustrating. It's like, now everybody's an expert, even if they're not an expert. So that is like one thing, but it doesn't matter, right? So you create an app and it looks really good. And that's great. I'm actually really happy that people can do that. That's why we teach the course on how to do that, so that people can experiment, get educated, start building their own stuff. That's great. There is a huge cost, though, that I'm realizing that people who don't build this, like, and of course, like, unless you're all day long living in the same world of building a product for this purpose, you're not going to know these things, right? So I was like, well, let's put some level, let's talk about it, right? Let's actually like run through what are the considerations that you need once you get past that, like that weekend demo or those couple weeks or few weeks. And so I basically was like talking about, you know, what's the ultimate problem, which is that, you know, basically some people say you get to this point where that experimentation occurs, probably by somebody in leadership, maybe not, maybe they just read some reports and watched somebody else's blog post or demo or whatever. But in any case, there's like a demo that works and finds vulnerabilities. And so then it becomes the problem is that then it like seems to immediately jump from, hey, this is a really useful thing that we like capability that we can start building around, to why don't we just get rid of everything we've been doing? And this is real. Like, I keep coming across this with people, and I know you do too, because we're having a lot of back channel, side channel conversations with people where they're like, can you believe that this? And I'm like, if you were the first 10 people to tell me this, yeah, I couldn't believe it. But no, like, it's happening everywhere where people are doing these demos, they're in leadership positions, they get something cool out of it. And then the immediate next step is, well, why don't we just get rid of everything? Let's get rid of vendors. Let's get rid of, you know, bug bounty programs. Let's get rid of just burn everything to the ground and start over and just redo everything with like Kiro or like Claude Code or some. And it's like, whoa, 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 hold on. You need to take a pause. There are a lot of considerations you haven't factored in. And that's what this blog post really does. I mean, I start talking about, so now that we've kind of talked about the background of why this blog post exists, if you scroll down to like the 3-week trap, it kind of starts asking some basic questions. And like, people don't, they do the demo and then it seems like that's where it stops. And these are the questions you have to be able to answer, right? Can it find the same issue tomorrow? Can it find the same issue 100 times in a row? Can it classify things? I'm reading this, by the way, for those who aren't watching. So anyways, can it classify findings consistently? Can it track them over time? Can it survive model changes, rate limits, and outages? Can it survive production traffic, which is a whole section on why production traffic shows and uncovers like different things you wouldn't have expected? You know, can it, and this is the big one, can it survive cost constraints? That's the one that I don't see enough attention being put on. And I'm telling you, like, margins are a constant battle for any of us operating in the AI space. And we know, you know, there's a nefarious little thing happening in the background where a lot of this stuff is being subsidized. If today I had to pay true costs and I was using a Mythos, dude, I couldn't even like charge enough to my customers to make it worth. I literally, like, I could give them a number, but nobody could afford it. Right. So that's why I say, like, you actually have to look at alternatives, and you only start to think about alternatives and start to run into even more things that you need to, you know, be aware of and plan for and engineer around. And all of that really comes down to, well, look, these things are very, very expensive. Anyways, can it survive edge cases? Is any of this provable? And how are we measuring that proof? And how will we know when we get it wrong, right? Very, very important questions to answer. In the next section, I kind of talk about like why, like, that is not the thing that anybody wants to talk about. Right? Like, they want to talk about the demo. They want to find like, hey, my thing, I used a multi-model harness. It bounced between, you know, 4 different LLMs. I found, you know, I pen tested, you know, against some running website, and I got X amount of vulnerabilities, and damn, this is cool. And yes, it is cool. But now we got to talk about other things beyond what's cool. And one thing I know we talk about it in the course, and I'll just give this to everybody for free, and I put it in this blog post. The one thing you have to start with from the beginning, not at the end, is evaluation. You have to know evaluation, benchmarking, and observability are the pillars of any good AI thing that you're doing, right? And that's just building a product. That's not like, there's so many of these things where, you know, if you're plucking out services, if you're plucking out your processes, if you're plucking out, that's not even talking about tool replacement. It's just assuming that a tool could be good enough that you can burn all those processes and all those things down. Nuts, right? Because when you talk about just building a product for one thing, there's a lot of engineering rigor that goes into it. Like I said, start with those three pillars. And then when you get
go, and then I'll put my comments on it. So yes, and then you get to.
No, so then I think, if you scroll down to the question leader should be asking, right?
Yeah, yep, here you go, yeah.
That's what I'll just kind of end with, I think, which is like, you need to know, yeah, these things. Like, you have to be able to say, what's your test set? What are the conditions? How's it measured? What vulnerabilities should the system find? And what does it consistently miss? How repeatable are the results? How are they fingerprinted? And how are duplicates handled? What happens when the model changes? What happens when you tweak your flows? What happens when tools fail or you hit rate limits or errors or outages? how do you know whether the system improved or if it quietly got worse? What is the token cost per vulnerability at scale over a period of time? And finally, how are you measuring and managing those cost fluctuations? And these are the questions I don't see anybody asking. And that's why I kind of came to the conclusion to like round this out that really right now, AI security has it just completely flat, just, I mean, non-existent evaluation and measurement. Basically, we just have a huge measurement problem. Nobody's measuring these things. They're just kind of building something quickly, you know, testing it, seeing it does cool stuff. The magic happens. Now it's time for the other side of the magic to happen. Now it's time to do real engineering rigor and work. And when you start looking at what that's going to cost you as a leader, not just in token cost, but with, I mean, the engineering work and the people behind it that's necessary. And if you're thinking you're just going to like cloud code your way into it, cool. That also costs a lot of money to build, you know, to use cloud code to build it. I have like, honestly, a real rude awakening for you. It's real tough. So sorry, Seth, that was me going off because like, I feel like I've been just holding this back for so long watching this happen and feels good to just put together something coherent.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and that's what I wanted to kind of go back to is like starting out building something without evaluations, without proper tests, without actually like running through this list, you're not building a product, you're building a demo, right? And which is great, right? The problem that we're seeing in the industry, and even if you look at some of the so-called academic papers that are coming out of security practitioners, is that they're all focused on very, very narrow, hey, you know, did it solve this CVE, right? And, or, right, like, so you're building a, you know, you're trying to compare LLMs on CVE mitigations, right? Like in an open source project, you're like, oh, this is a good thing that you could actually measure. I won't argue with that. But the problem is you do that once, right? Or maybe you do a run two or three times, right? With comparing those different LLMs. That is not a significant sample. That's not how we would actually academically prove something with a sufficient rigor, right? It's not, right? Like we would be analyzing that same CVE over time, you know, probably 100 times, maybe 1,000 times to make sure that we're getting a statistical sample that is relevant before we actually produce results. And so what we've built is a whole bunch of harnesses. We've built a whole bunch of tools that do something semi-security related, but it's not dependable. It doesn't actually match all these or hit any of these baseline questions that you would expect from a security tool to introduce into your pipeline and to actually help you secure a large organization. You know, I do see some of this going on, you know, at various organizations when you run into people that really understand and have started to build tooling properly. But it is very few and far between. That tool that's being released at B-Sides that somebody came up with in their, you know, their hackathon or over the weekend using Cloud Code is not going to solve this problem for you at scale. I don't know how else to say it. It's not. You're going to have to basically put in all the effort that a startup would or that a, you know, tool vendor would to operationalize an LLM to do something properly. That, like, that is the cost. The LLM piece actually, and I know we've said this in the course before, we would argue, or I would argue, that the LLM piece is actually the easiest piece of that.
Yeah. Yep.
It is.
I would say that is the easiest. Yeah.
It's gotten, and part of that is just the concentration. The models have gotten so much better. Initially, we had to, you know, engineer our way around very, very poor models, right? Just go try and do any of this with Code Llama or one of the old, you know, Llama instances, you know, from, you know, years ago. And you'll see very quickly how poor those models were. The frontier models have gotten really good. Even the open source models have gotten really good at, you know, answering these questions. And as long as you prompt them correctly, that's the easy part. The hard part is what you're seeing in front of you here.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, It's like I say, it's like you can get 80% there, and that remaining 20% is the part that takes the longest, that's the hardest, that really teaches you the lessons that will lead to like a good. But again, this is like the whole point that I am, what's frustrating, like what's really frustrating to me is, and I wrote it here, I put the quote from the article. Basically, I'll just cherry pick a line from here, which is like the danger is in the demo. The danger is believing the demo represents a mature capability. And really then like making business decisions based off of that, making process decisions, you know, spending decisions, like these are everything we've done up until this point has had time to marinate in security. This is the one area that hasn't for a industry which shows such high skepticism, and who wouldn't even allow me 3 years ago to analyze their code with AI. Literally, people were like, that doesn't seem like that could happen and work out well. And like, I don't trust sending my data to AI. Like, wow, has that flipped on the last 3 years on me, right? Like, wow, to the point where it's like, now I'm the one being like, wait, hold on, wait. I know it's good in terms of capabilities, but what are you doing? Like, stop. Think about it. Pause. Take a break. You know, think it through a little. Have a glass of water. I don't know. Maybe watch a show. Think about something else. Let it marinate. Come back to that thought. Because Jesus, you should not be cutting things just because like AI showed you a cool whatever output for your harness you built. So anyways, just very scary time. Sometimes I'm like, what is going on? And it's hard to reason about some of the decisions and the thinking that the thinking process is going on out there. But in any case, I would want to share one thing that you might find funny. We had about the cost thing that just popped into my head a couple of minutes ago. We had I can't say their name, but we had a company we're working with, and they came to us, and they had access to Mythos, and they were running everything through Mythos. And it cost them $5,000 plus a day, per day. I'm like, well, yeah, surely that's the math on that's going to work great. I'm like, yeah, that sucks. That's crazy. So,
yeah.
Anywho.
I mean, it's subsidized, right? And that's one of the things that you have to realize when you are building something with Cloud Code, or you're running one of those skills, right? And you're on like a subscription plan, and it works, you know, pretty well against an open source project. And like, you know, when you're talking a million lines of code or less, right? Like, oh yeah, this is great. But you don't have a true view of that cost until you go to the token based, when you start actually paying for that as it goes back and forth. Anthropic is hiding that from you because they want you to utilize it and get addicted to the capabilities. So that when you do flip to the token side, you're basically all in on that platform, right? Like, this is the balkanization of AI or frontier models is what they want to happen. They want you know, solely dependent on them and their capabilities, which is the reason that they introduced all of these different tools and skills that are embedded in Cloud Code, or they're embedded in Codex, is to keep you on their platform and in their ecosystem. I won't argue that that's not useful, because it is, but you have to realize that that's going to happen. And at some point, that token cost is going to get shared with you. Whether it is through you moving from a subscription plan to actually utilizing tokens, or maybe it's just, hey, they went and they did their IPO and now have to actually show profitability. At some point, that token cost is going to get pushed down to you rather than to the investors of these companies. And I know we've said that before. It's coming. Just be aware that it's going to happen. And I think Larry in Slack was saying something along those lines too. Yeah, plan for the tokenomics. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, I don't have to use frontier, like paid commercial frontier models anymore. I don't have to.
Yeah.
You know, we can use any number of really robust open source models. In fact, we've started looking at a new provider. I won't say who, because I only release things once it's gone well, and we like them, if ever. But we are looking at a new provider who pretty much exclusively is allowing us to host, self-host our own open source LLMs because we're like finding that, yeah, performance just isn't worth the stuff we got to deal with. And the cost is not the only problem, actually. Performance is not always what you would expect. And, you know, when cost does come into play, it's like, well, these aren't the best models then. So, you know, but yeah. I'm not even trying. Look, the point is like, coming back to it, it's like, just if I had to zoom out of this whole conversation we've had, it's basically like a company played on the marketing stream. They built a really useful thing, but they played out their hand on the marketing side way too hard, even though there were people like myself, like you and others who were like, hey, calm down, slow down there. You're putting out too much. And it's too much. It's too much. It's going to blow back on everybody, including you. It did. And in the meantime, if I had to look at the other side of this, it's like we're seeing people make really knee-jerk reactions, you know, and it makes sense. There's always these pressures and like the C-suite, you know, always wants to know like what's your plan to whatever, like what's your response for like having a Mythos ready security program. That's sometimes the thing. Sometimes it's, well, can't we just cut all this headcount that we've got on security? Can't we stop spending? Like, we don't need that many people. We don't need to spend, you know, money on tools. We don't need to this, that, and the other. We've heard of people saying like, hey, get rid of your threat modeling processes, get rid of your releases process. You're in the way, like you just get out of the way. Like you're a boon now. And like, those two things are kind of converging at this very moment where it's like, oh, it turns out it's not that much of a killer. And meanwhile, people are hopefully starting to realize, hopefully, the error of their ways in some decision-making around this like thing that was, you know, the albatross around everyone's neck, at least theoretically. So, you know, from where it goes here, honestly, I don't know, man. This is, I get the popcorn out and I'm loving life right now. It's amazing for me. I just need to sit back and be like, yeah, fucking told you so. I've been saying it. You've been saying it. So, yeah.
Yep, exactly. Cool. All right. Should we switch back to some basic stuff? What do you want to jump into?
Hey, I actually did one of this. Is not that elite. It's not that whatever. But I actually thought it was pretty helpful for people that deal with VS Code extensions and extensions in general. That was a nice article, especially with Team PCP breaches going on like all the time. Well, not just Team, you know, it's like Lapsus, Team PCP, you name it. There's somebody, some group hacking, and I can actually share this if you'd like.
Okay.
Maybe you can see that. Got it. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Zoom in a little bit. That's a little small, okay. But otherwise.
Okay, so this talks about the mitigations that people are putting in place as defenders to keep, you know, malicious VS Code IDE extensions from being installed. That's kind of like, you know, I mean, if you're not if you haven't seen it, lots of attacks on packages, not just, you know, like libraries, like npm packages, as well as like extensions and skills and things like that. All right, so here's the sort of thing. What people have been doing is they've been blocking the marketplace.visualstudio.com URL. Now, for the flow, basically what happens is there is a post request sent to get the actual, like, it's like a response with the metadata. It's got, like, basically a link to where to go and actually download the binary, right? So that's step one. You have to actually send a post request, and once you do that, you get back a response with metadata and the download URL, and then you send a GET request off to a different, and this is important, to a different domain completely from the one we just talked about, which was like, you know, something.gallerycdn.vsassets.io. So a completely different domain. It's a CDN node, and it serves the extension as a zip file. Then finally, the zip file gets unpacked into the extensions directory, and at that point, it runs, right? That's kind of the flow of how it should work. And so what people are doing is saying like, okay, let's go ahead and block marketplace.visualstudio.com, and they're finding themselves still exploited. So there's two separate bypass, or there's two bypasses. There's the actual bypass, and there's like a secondary security control people also put in, and he talks about, or they talk about, whoever this is, talks about the get bypassing that. So just real quick, the first thing is obviously you can just have somebody click on a URL to get directly to the VS Assets binary. It's not, he has the structure, or they, whoever wrote this, sorry, has the structure right here. So basically the only thing you kind of have to guess, I suppose, is the Unix timestamp, but like, I mean, that's enumerable, like whatever. And then there's like version, extension name, publisher. Those are variables, but besides that, the URL is pretty much always the same. So not too hard to figure out the URL for, you know, sending to somebody to have them download the binary, I suppose. But anyways, you can send that in and you can just download the binary. And obviously at that point, it gets installed and now you have a malicious VS Code extension inside of your, inside of VS Code. Now, the second sort of level of security people are introducing is endpoint privilege management. So they try to block any, what are they trying to do? I'm trying to remember. They block the installation. That's right. They block the actual installation. So even if you went to downloading if you were able to go off, download the package, once it goes to the install flow, like it won't work because you've blocked and restricted that using endpoint privilege management. Caveat being, VS Code loads anything under the extensions folder. So any folder under the extensions folder, you know, gets loaded. So that's one bypass for the endpoint, the EPM secondary control there. The remediation is pretty clear. He's like, just block all, or they, I keep saying he, I don't actually know who wrote this, so sorry. But in any case, and I'll go look at the author in a second, or if you want to, Seth. But gives the domains domains to block. So just gives some like nice ways to prevent, if you're using VS Code inside your organization, prevent these malicious packages. So I don't know if you had any thoughts on any of that. I just, let's see, Aman Khurana.
Khurana.
Yes, you wrote that. Yeah, I don't know. Sorry.
It's a good walkthrough, right? Like, I mean, developers are getting popped through VS Code extensions, right, and attacks. And so we've got to understand what's actually going on there. This is really good from a, you know, incident response perspective. So we know how it's actually happening. So just, you know, blocking VS Code Marketplace, obviously, is not sufficient. And this, like, the amount of breaches that are happening right now in the supply chain space, but in general, because of the use of AI by attackers, means that we have to rethink the security model that has worked. And I'm not the first person to say this, right? Like, it used to be that we could depend on time to exploit to be pretty long, right? So something was found in Visual Studio Code, you know, you could wait a week or 2 weeks to actually patch or to put sort of some sort of prevention in place. And we could also, you know, depend on the fact that our SOC was just not getting constant alerts. And so there was like this two-pronged, it's going to take a while for something to be exploited. There's not going to be a lot of noise that comes into the SOC, or at least we'll recognize what that new noise is. And so we don't necessarily have to maintain that blast radius in, you know, realistically, you know, that, you know, a short amount of time. But nowadays, with the way that things are flowing, the blast radius of what happens on a developer workstation needs to be reconsidered. We have to take into account what they have access to in GitHub. We have to take into account what that looks like and what sort of access they have to push code into GitHub Actions and to actually like step into the development pipeline, because that is what attackers are targeting and looking at, right? The reason that we are seeing so many supply chain attacks is developers being targeted, GitHub Actions are being targeted, or the pipelines being targeted. And then whatever they have access to is another distribution mechanism that is occurring on top of everything else. Yes, Bobby, exactly. One juicy target is greater than 1,000 with similar access. That's what's being looked at. again, I go back to the fact that attackers are utilizing AI to gain context about what developers have access to when they get access to those tokens and to those workstations. And this is just the start of that, right? We're continually trying to cut off that initial access path that attackers have into a resource. This is the initial path. We've been very lax up to this point with what developers have access to, because they need to have access in order to create these projects. And it's biting us right now. It is biting us hard. So we've got to plan for that. Sorry, Ken. I went off on, you know, from the article to what it is making me think about there.
I like it. Yeah, no, I mean, it's broader. And actually, Bobby was talking about, you know, having like one package manager to rule. Now it's not frameworks. Now it's one. I like it. One package manager to rule them all. And I was just saying that it's like the juiciest target on the planet.
Isn't that what GitHub's basically become? Is the one package manager where everything's hosted? I mean, yeah, the distribution paths could be PyPI or NPM or whatever else, but that seems to be the target, right? Is GitHub or GitLab? I guess anything. The Git protocols is where everything is actually hosted. Sorry, Matt, yeah, I'm. You know, I don't want to belabor your point. Sorry, or, you know, steal the thunder, whatever.
No. Actually, I was just thinking. No. I was actually just thinking about a lot of things. But just sort of thinking about where does agent? I know it's silly, but like, where does agent identity go from here? Because as you were saying, like, basically developers having all this access and then like using AI tooling and being able to like basically being able to see what they have access to, leveraging that access, et cetera, et cetera. I was thinking about like one problem that came up during that, back to the original thing in the beginning when we were talking about OWASP Nova. One question that I had for folks, and I don't know, I'm sure there are solutions that are like working on solving this and whatever, but it's like, I don't feel like right now we have a great story for agent identities and federating access. And I know someone's gonna be like, Ken, how do you not? I do know that there are like people working on these problems, but right now there's like people actively and have been for months and months and months and months using AI assisted development and using agentic workflows. If it's not AI assisted development, maybe it's like their product has agentic workflows or whatever inside of it. And it's not like there's been any, I haven't seen anyone like talking too much on the developer side about security and federation and access, you know, basically managing access to all the different services that agents get access to. And then, but more importantly, and this goes back to your Crocs and Socks and auditing and logging and all of that stuff, is actually like having an identity tied to that agent that persists and actually becomes like its entity identifier forever. Right. I don't know, man. I just went off on the beat. Sorry. You started saying stuff and it put me off into like a whole other spectrum of thought on agentic identification and privileged access.
Yeah. It's just happening, right? Like for so many years, and I'm not sure who on LinkedIn actually commented, but appreciate that, right? Like that dev workstations are the soft underbelly. The fact that it's taken this long to hit critical mass is still very surprising. It is, but this has been in my threat models for years, right? Engineering access, privileged access to code, to applications. It's always been a discussion. And the number of times that I've had organizations that just kind of poo-poo this, or they're like, yeah, but we have, you know, endpoint protection on all of our developer workstations, right? Like, oh, so obviously they're never going to get popped. It was a hard problem to solve because of the access that they needed. So most organizations just kind of hit the easy button, which you can't blame them for, you know, the landscape that we were in 5 to 10 years ago, it worked. Guess what? It's over now. We've got to, like I said, we've got to pay the piper because that's what's happening, and figure out how to really institute layered security and the Crocs and Socks of security in general. right? If we don't have logging involved, if we don't have some of these other pieces that we've been telling the auditors for years that we've solved that problem, but they're not really operationalized, it's not a matter of if anymore, it's a matter of when it happens. And that's what we've got to prepare for.
It's definitely when. I actually would add to that too and say it's not just dev workstations anymore. I mean, you know, everybody's using like a Perplexity and uploading like things and doing things and building things. And like
everyone's a developer.
Also everybody, well, not even just a developer of a product, just for whatever they're like, and this is actually, I know now we're really gonna get outside of our normal stuff and whatever, but one thing that really bothers me is that there is a reality where you no longer have the ability to control or even know when, like, I don't know, someone wants to take a spreadsheet with a bunch of customer information and say, here, Perplexity, here, OpenAI, here, whoever, you know, synthesize some data out of this for me and do some things. And like, your policy may say like these are classification, and then therefore if it's classified in these layers, these are how we these are how we handle, this is our data handling like sort of process or whatever. It's like, I guarantee you none of that shit is like following any of those processes or policies or anything. And like, but the problem is, and this is the one that, and I know like some people just say like, well, I buy enterprise license and then just don't worry because you're supposed to be opted out of training. You're supposed to have these, whatever. It's like, if you feel good enough about that, great, cool. I mean, it scares the living daylight out of me to think somebody's just like, you know, in like a 2000 person organization, you might have like 300 people pushing some really scary stuff up just because it makes their job. And actually maybe, sorry, the last thing I'll say is maybe as I'm saying that out loud, maybe that's another good reason to have a sort of self-hosted model that you can always kind of like talk to, so that you know, at least you have like, it's the idea of like on-premise control, right? Versus in the cloud. It's that same kind of that level of control that you feel when it's on your premises.
Yep.
Anyways, it's just like that one scares me because you do need to upload certain things that to make your job go faster, but it's like there's a limit, and like, is that limit being respected? Probably not. Probably never.
Yeah. Well, I always go back to the basics, right? And we've written these basics into policy for a number of years. And at some point we should bring, you know, Kisten from Atreides on to talk about policy and GRC.
Yeah, let's do that. Why is Kisten not come on the podcast?
But the number of organizations that I walk into, especially like as they get larger, where we have discussions about, oh, I don't know, data classification, and the developers have no idea that there is even a data classification standard for their organization, it is non-zero. Right? Those organizations have a hard time where GRC and legal comes up with a framework that is mandated for an organization. The developers see that once during onboarding, with the addition of everything else that they're doing during the onboarding process. And it's never actually enforced at the level of, hey, the developers are writing this into code. They're actually classifying data as it comes in from a consumer into their applications, into their organization. Everything is just either, oh, it's internal or it's, you know, external, right? Like the levels of controls just don't get put into place. And this is expounded across the whole information security policy against a development policy that developers just aren't educated in what their organization is actually telling customers and auditors that is being implemented. And I mean, it's an education problem.
There is a gap there. I can see how that happens too, because the people creating those standards are not the ones who are communicating the standards, and then the ones filling out, which is usually like sales, right? With maybe some help from GRC, which is like vendor questionnaires. None of those people involved are engineers, and I don't know how much time they spend with engineers. That's actually really, really really good problem. Sorry, I don't have a better vocabulary, but that's a great problem you called out there, Seth. It's real.
Yeah, I don't know why we're on GRC now all as well, right? Like, it's just who knows where we go with the podcast anymore, Ken.
Well, it started with Fable and everything, and then it was got pulled back, and then like we'll talk about all the ways. No, I'm joking. I'm kidding. Not serious.
Oh wow. Anyway, we've been going for a good amount of time. I have one other article. I'll include that in the newsletter this week. It's just around the basics of, or we can drop it in here really quick for people to read. Somebody ended up taking over a threat actor's website because of some very interesting basics that I wanted to talk about, but I'll call those out in, the newsletter itself. I just really, it all comes back to what we're talking about at the basics, like, you know, creating like different gaps and realizing where those gaps exist and doing a threat model, making sure that we understand how, you know, different pieces of our application are actually doing things, you know, what the framework is that we're actually utilizing, where the gotchas are and the security misconfigurations that can occur, right? It's all the basics that we talk about, but it's interesting to see somebody use those against a threat actor site as well, because guess what? Everybody actually makes these mistakes, whether it is the threat actors that are building dashboards to actually run, you know, all the things, you know, all the different nodes that are connecting back to them, whether it's a security tool that's being built, you know, by Claude and a pen testing dashboard that is vulnerable to prompt injection, to, you know, take your pick, to enterprise software. It's always comes back to the Crocs and Socks, which is why, you know, yeah, I always harp on it. Anyway,
yeah, you should. And I think that's I had to put a bow on this episode. I'd say, I think we're back to like Crocs and Socks. I think we're back to okay, that was weird. like, let's get back to like the actual bread and butter of securing organizations. And yeah, feels good.
Yeah,
feels good to start turning a corner on this weird page.
Yeah, it might be time for some new Crocs and Socks t-shirts for DEF CON as well. I think that's some swag that's inbound that we haven't necessarily released yet. And, you know, yeah.
I have design ideas. I think we can make something really, really, yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
We will make that happen. That's all I'm saying. So, all right. Well, that's great for this week. We are going to be doing another episode with the Coffee and Prodsec podcast. Chaos Coffee. Man, I can never
Thank you. Yes. Hey, by the way, we did do a webinar with Cameron about all this to help answer this question. Thank you for bringing that up, because I know Chris Kurt, you and I are trying to do one episode on their podcast in July and one on ours.
Yep.
We don't have dates.
So we'll Coffee Chaos. I always want to mix up, you know, prospecting or coffee and chaos. Coffee Chaos and Prodsec, right? So with Cameron and Kurt, we're going to be doing again another session where they come on our podcast, another collaboration. So watch for that. We will post about it before it actually happens. We have other people that we're trying to get on the podcast. Life has been getting in the way. I seem to say that all the time, to actually scheduling some of those, but we will get that out and we'll get a schedule together. Join us on Slack. If you don't have an invite for Slack, please reach out, Seth or Ken, or info@absoluteappsec.com. We'll get you an invite. We'll get you into the community. And yeah, otherwise I think we'll see everybody next week. Anything else, Ken, you want to bring up?
Just thanks for everybody for listening and supporting the podcast. And just really appreciate it as always. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks all. We will see you all next week.